Bibles open to Proverbs chapter 2. Proverbs chapter 2 and verses 6 through 9, and we are in verse 8. In our first session, we dealt with the issue of corresponding probing question in Romans chapter 8 that matches up with the final component of five components in verse 6, 7, and 8 of Proverbs 2 that produce a godly exhortation, a fatherly exhortation to his son that specifically is geared toward his commitment just prior to him presenting himself to his father for his formal education to begin. His father wants to make sure his level of commitment is where it needs to be for the rigors of what he is getting ready to undergo. And one of the major issues is that he's committed to the effectual working of every component that his father's going to teach him. In our education, there's nothing frivolous. As I said on Wednesday, there's no, I forgot the word again. What are they called? What kind of classes, extra class, electives. I had to do that Wednesday. There's no electives. You know, I took, when I was in Bible Institute, I took an elective. I took sign language, American Sign Language. I just figured, hey, if I could give the gospel in sign language to somebody, it's just another way to be able to present the gospel. Our final was we had to sing in sign language. I think I did, Burdens Are Lifted at Calvary, or Calvary is like this. Funny story about that. My teacher was deaf. It was a woman, and her husband would translate. And most deaf people give themselves a sign for their name instead of having to spell it all out. Her name was Rosie, and she gave herself a sign. I think it was this. That's just her sign. And every time I'd walk into class, you'd say hi, and I'd go Rosie, and hi Rosie. Well, her sign was this. I was doing this. That means stupid. And I was going, hi, stupid, every time I... She was really kind about it. And finally her husband came up and he said, Mark, you need to turn your hand over because you're calling my wife stupid every time. So there was some skill level there that still needed developed. But once you gain an understanding and appreciation for the fact that there are no electives. Everything you learn is integral to your being conformed to the image of Christ and to the ultimate goal of your sonship education. And so therefore, you deal with that final probing question to do all that it does. We went over a review of that last time, and now your father comes along. And one of the final things that he says he's going to do, where your commitment to the effectual working of every component that he teaches you, is that when it comes to anyone or anything that the adversary could throw at you to try to separate you from the love of Christ or the love of God which is in Christ Jesus, that love isn't his love for you, your love for him. That's the love you now possess, just as Christ and the Father does, for your sonship life, for its aims, its goals, its objectives, and reaching its conclusion. In the exhortation, he comes along and says, he preserveth the way of his saints. And when it comes to matching this up with that fifth probing question, and seeing that how they correspond, we know that we're dealing with the third and final enemy that we have to our sonship edification. You compose two of your enemies. You're an enemy in two different levels to yourself, but this is the adversary, Satan himself, who desires to separate you from the love of Christ. And when we looked at the issue of our first two enemies of our sonship education, you being your own worst enemy on both counts, we saw that early on the Father made you aware in the book of Proverbs that was a possible problem or obstacle that you were going to have to your sonship life. We saw that in Proverbs 1. Flip over there and just take note of the two places where that occurred. The very first time you were told that you yourself were going to be a problem is the first verse after the table of contents, verse 7, when he says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The Father told you, you were made aware that you could be a problem in this. You could be a fool. You could despise wisdom and instruction. You are the first line of enemy you'll face. Then down in verse 10, he comes down and he says, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. There's going to be, when you, and that's why in verse 8, he keepeth the paths plural. When you, as your own worst enemy, to opt out for the Father's sonship graces or these grace opportunities to be vocationally trained, you automatically have to opt for a path that the adversary has charted in this world. You're opting out of the paths, plural, of your Father, and opting for the paths of the course of this world. And therefore, when you opt for the Father's paths, plural, He has in His Word the capacity to keep, to guard, to protect, to maintain that those paths that you're taking. And so, we have seen that in verse 10 there in Proverbs chapter 1, he talks about in some detail how that's going to take place when you're enticed. The sinners are going to come to you. They're in the world. You don't have to go to them. They'll come to you. And they're going to make it so that you have to make a decision. Down in verse 14 is the decision. Cast in thy lot among us. And everything that's said there is designed to feed your lust. So you have those two sides of you being your own worst enemy. But when it comes to making you aware of this final enemy, you look all the way down through chapter 1, and you look all the way down through the beginning of chapter 2, and you don't find the Father say anything about it. This is where you're first told about it. But he immediately jumps on it in verse 10 of chapter 2. And you're made aware of this entity called the evil man, and then the strange woman. So when you look for the first two issues of our sonship edification as our enemies, you see the Father kind of bring it to your mind. But for the third one, we don't find this enemy being talked about in Proverbs chapter 1 anywhere. And therefore, when you come to chapter 2, and what you're supposed to be doing at this point in the kind of the second part of phase 1 of level 1, you're perceiving the words of understanding. And when you start, you're looking at the words of understanding, you come to chapter 2, and now you're to look at the words of understanding with a bit more perception. And it's not until you get down to the exhortation there in Proverbs 2:7 itself where you begin to encounter what God says about what He does and how He functions and how He's built into the curriculum to deal with any and all opposition because of what you've already been told. When the Father says He'll be your buckler, He'll keep your paths of judgment, you might think when you get to He keepeth paths of judgment that there should be a period right here. That's the end of it, because that's all that's kind of been brought into my mind in chapter 1. But there's one more, and preserveth the way of His saints. The way singular. Now, here a son's confronted with one form of opposition that he really hasn't had any need to deal with yet. His father has said nothing to him about it up to this point. But now he needs to realize, that son needs to realize, there is a legitimate form of opposition, listen, that is dedicated to making it so that the overall way, the way, it's like the paths are inside the way, but the way is the singular overall way. So that the way singular that the Son is on, there's one particular form of opposition that its entire focus is dedicated to making it so that the Son's way, His overall way, that He is prevented from fulfilling that way and meeting the objective at the end of it all. That's what the adversary, Satan himself, wants and desires to thwart and to stop is you getting to the end of the way. He knows what's at the end of that way. And if he can prevent you from getting to the end of the way and can actually separate you from that way, he's achieved his objective. And by the way, he has reserved his most powerful, subtle, and dynamic attacks at his disposal to separate you from that way. And there's a reason why he says, and preserveth the way of his saints. Notice he doesn't say, and he preserveth the way of his sons. Isn't this about sonship? But he says he preserveth the way of his saints. God uses saints instead of sons. There's a reason for that. And if you've tracked with me for a while, we've talked about the word saints, and it has to do with what the word saints means. And it's interesting, again, that you take terminology and keep them in the contextually sensitive area that God put them. You'll see why that's the more excellent term to use. Saints, as you all know, what does saint mean in general? Anybody? In the Greek, when you have it over in the New Testament, it's from the word hagios, if that's helpful. Yeah, it's the same kind of root we have sanctification. Yeah, it means to be set apart. And in general, the word saint, the way God uses it, means one, it's not the way the Catholic Church uses it. I guess little John Paul II is about getting ready to, of course he's dead and rotten, but they're going to make him a saint. He's about one step away from sainthood. I think there has to be another miracle associated with him. Somebody evoked his name and, healed their ear or acne or, But now they're waiting for another one. You have to have so many, The Catholic Church is real strict about stuff like that. Not knowing that you're a saint and I'm a saint. Saint Mark. I wrote one of the Gospels. But you are. And so it's generally one who has been set apart unto God. But saints, when they're being spoken about in the context of sonship, more specifically looks at what the Son is specifically set apart in connection to with his sonship education. That's why he preserveth the way of his saints. It's not just, listen, every believer today in the body of Christ is an adopted son. They got that as a part of the package of who they have been made to be in Christ. You're adopted at the moment that you were saved, the moment that you believed that Christ died for you, was buried, and rose again. You're not made aware of it at that time, but the reality of that is there. But most Christians, as you know, never ever function for a single second as a son. Even if they see sonship, they only see it as an event. They don't see it as a status in which their life is to be lived out that way from now on. And so God comes along here and he says, I'm not just talking about any old son. If I use sons, that could be misinterpreted. But if I use saints in the context, and the power of the context makes it so that you and I'm going to use this word in a good way, you skew what the word saint means there. It's not just talking about every believer. It's talking about in a context of sons who are saints. They are, that is, it's a more specific word that can be used in connection with what you are as a son set apart to. And that's what he's going to preserve. That's the way that you're set apart to. A son is set apart unto meeting and achieving the objective at the end of the whole thing, of the whole sonship curriculum. That's what you're set apart to. At the end of it, it's like taking every single one of us. This is one of the reasons why you get into all this controversy over what God's will is. God's will for me is the same as it is for you. We all enter this educational process. It's kind of we all funnel into the gates of the school, and when we all come out of it, we're all going to come out with the same thing. We're all going to come out conformed to the image of Christ, and we're all going to come out of it so that we can be utilized by Him in the creature. And so, therefore, That's the nature of why he's using the word saints. It's got that end objective of the whole thing in view. That's what we're set apart into in this context. And therefore, there is a singular way that runs from the beginning of sonship education all the way to the end of it. And you were made aware of that in Romans chapter 8 in sonship establishment, that when it comes to you acknowledging the reality that all things work together for your good, to them who love God, to them who are called according to His purpose, and you went down through those five links in His chain of provision that makes that the living reality, one of those things is that you are being conformed to the image of His Son. And that there's a singular way that is the objective of the whole thing. And achieving the overall objective of that way is going to involve a son being set apart unto achieving that objective throughout the entire course of the curriculum. Well, there's one form of opposition that knows that way better than you do right now. There is one form of opposition that knows that way as well as the Father who put the thing together knows it. And there's one form of opposition that cannot afford to have one of you as a son make it to the very end. When it comes to those other issues, it's kind of hid up there, the buckler, which was your first enemy, yourself, and the sin in your members. And then the world, the paths of judgment, and you've chosen a path of the world. Look, the world, now I'm going to be real careful in what I say here because it can do it, but I'm going to say for right now it can't, even though it can. So if you're really confused, let me just say it this way. The world, the course of this world really doesn't care if you make it to the end of sonship or not. It doesn't care. I'm not saying it can't stop the process. It can. But it really doesn't care. It just wants to trip you up everywhere it can. And honestly, sin in your members doesn't really care if you make it to the end or not. But when it comes to making it to the end of the way, the adversary cares deeply. That's the one who's in view here. That's the who of Romans 8:35. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? It's Satan, the adversary himself. And that's the one who God says He will preserve the way of His saints from. And so the adversary certainly cares because he's the only one who's really hurt by a son actually making it to the end of the way. And it's once the Son is on the way, and we're going to be on the way in just three verses, in Romans 12:3, we're going to be on the way. Once the Son is on the way, and He begins demonstrating that He's able, with the curriculum, with God's Word living, the living words of the living God living in Him, to deal with sin in His members, to deal with the world's opposition against Him, that adversary then, at that point, earns, and I'm going to say it this way because this is the reality of it, he earns the right to begin to oppose you as a son in that way. Where you sit right now, the adversary hasn't even earned the right to begin opposing you. The struggles you're having, if you're having them, is with yourself right now. Because the adversary really hasn't even earned the right to start opposing you until you get on the way and start demonstrating ability and skillfulness to deal with the sin in your members, to deal with being able to walk that way and walk the paths, plural, of judgment. So he will earn the right to begin to oppose. That's why, notice there in Proverbs 2, verse 10, beginning in verse 10 and on down through verse 20. That's why as soon as the Father says this to the Son and makes His conclusion, in verse 9. Immediately in verse 10, he goes on and says to the son more or less, all right, now we've got to take a look at the words of understanding even more closely than we just have, because I brought to your attention now the fact that we have to look at it in connection with this third and final component of opposition. And son, you need to know right now that when wisdom enters your heart, just as verse 10 says, and knowledge is pleasant unto your soul, when you start walking down that way, you hit in, for our sonship life, in our curriculum of Romans through 2 Thessalonians, when you hit Romans 12, 3, and you begin walking that way, and you're learning the decision-making skills of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. All right? That's why he ends with that in verse 9. He says, now, son, you know, you need to know that when wisdom enters your heart, knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee. Why? To deliver you from the, notice the word way, of the evil man. And then he describes that in verses 12 through 15. And then to deliver thee from the strange woman. And you have verses 16 through 20. And the evil man and the strange woman is proverbial language that aptly describes the two components of the adversary's opposition that you're going to be up against. There are things that the evil man, the course of this world, can do right now to you. But there are other things built into it that won't even rise to the occasion, to put it that way, until it, and this is a funny way of talking about the course of this world, but it's really true. It's almost like it's a living thing. When it detects a sonship life within it, it has even greater abilities to deal with you, or to be problematic, or to oppose. All right? And we'll discuss this more when we get into areas of Romans 13 and in some of these areas, especially when you first have when you have to don the armor of light. We'll talk more about this. But the other one is this strange woman whose allurements are going to be so tempting because they're going to look so much more appealing than the way that you're on. And that's why she's talked about almost as a prostitute. She knows how to flatter with her lips and her words. And it says when you look at some of the detail there, it says she's forsaken the God. She has, in verse 17, forsaken the guide of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God. There is within the strange woman, I'm not saying the strange woman is totally this, but she comprises the issue even of religion and of pseudo-Christianity. And like I said, one of the first things you're going to get, family and friends, Christian friends, who if you try to talk to them about sonship, they're going to say, oh, that's not right. And you all know, every one of you in here have experienced hitting the third rail with somebody. You know what that third rail is, right? There it is. Miracles. Oh, I prayed, I lost my car keys, and I just prayed, oh God, please help me find, and I found them. Miracle. Lost my dentures and found them. Miracle. And you hear it, listen, think objectively for a moment. Aren't miracles on some of the dumbest levels enforced by the course of this world? Look at the nightly news. When Katie Couric is telling you a miracle took place on the Hudson River, that's not your fault. I don't know if you realize this or not, but is she on CBS or ABC or whatever she's on? That's not your father's network. See? But that's just embraced. This young lady who was shot is recovering. It's miraculous. The word miracle and miraculous gets thrown around and slapped on almost everything and anything. And so it is. It's one of the touchiest subjects that you'll deal with a believer on that I know of, unless you're talking about tongues with some guy who's, you know, a Pentecostal or something. And then miracles are just unbelievable. But my advice on all of that is don't start there. But honestly, you have so much that is built into the world system in which God is going to come along and provide for the opportunity for you to utilize those things and not to avoid them, as we talked about before. But when it comes to when it comes to the Son having to be delivered, he's delivered from the way of the evil man and from the strange woman. And you're going to face those things, and God makes you aware of them. And the evil man and the strange woman are those two components you're going to face. They're not the most consistent forms of opposition that you'll face. Granted, you yourself is going to be the closest, most constant opposition you'll face. The strange man, the evil woman are not the most frequent forms of opposition. But here's the rub, or the kicker is, those tactics of the policy of evil are the most devastating that you're going to face. And that is the truth of the matter. And you know that from what we just covered in our last session, even looking back to Romans 8, 35, 36 especially, 37. And the main reason for that is even though the first two forms of opposition, you yourself being your own worst enemy, when it comes to the singular way, not the paths, but the way issue, you know, your sin and your members and the world system and all the way of the course of this world, they can trip you up. Those two forms of enemy can knock you down. They can cause you some real problem. I'm not trying to minimize it. But more often than not, though, they don't make it so that you never, ever get to the end of the way. Most of those problems are temporary. They don't cause you to be separated from the way. You may be separated from a path here and there, but you can get back on those paths. You can go back and get the information and get the training. There's no statute of limitations in this course, like there are in some schools where they say, well, if you went through these courses in this amount of time, we can apply it. But if you went through them and time has elapsed to where we think that you can't, then you can't apply it. That's not the way this course is. There's no statute of limitations. You can always recover from that. But more often than not, though, they don't, as I say, make it so that you cannot get to the end of the way. That is, it's not their goal. But the adversary's goal is to make it so that you never get to the end of the overall way. You don't finish the way. And really, the adversary's opposition is designed to make it so that, listen to this carefully, because this is the nuance you need to have in mind. His opposition makes it so that you don't want to walk the way anymore. It doesn't have the attractiveness that it once had. You no longer love it. The adversary's tactic isn't to make it so that you simply choose, make a choice preference-wise, not to walk the way anymore, but it makes it so that you choose not to walk the way any longer because, listen, you don't want to face the consequences of walking that way anymore. That's the nuance of it. In fact, just as we talked about, I mentioned it in the last lesson, the way that you walk and the adversary's attempts to separate you from it is nothing but pure 100% outright intimidation. Whether it's tribulation or distress or persecution or famine, nakedness, peril, or sword, it comes down to intimidation. And that's what it is. It is outright scare the pants off of you. I don't want to do this anymore. This is so unpleasant to me. I don't want to even face this anymore. And intimidation in the adversary's hands is one of his greatest pry bars to be able to pry you away from your love, the love of Christ. And when you think about what all the sufferings of Christ are about, that's really what's at the heart of them all. That's why in Romans 8:35, for example, you have that list of those seven things the adversary will do to try to separate you from the love of Christ. And what you have described here in Proverbs chapter 2, and when you go down from verse 10 through verse 20, really that's only round one, so to speak, of the policy of evil. And if you keep reading on through Proverbs, we don't have time to go look at it right now. But that's why later on in Proverbs, like in chapter 7, you'll find that strange woman. She comes up again. And I'll grant you there's some similarities between what is said there and what is said in chapter 2, but there's more of an advancement of it. It's more advanced than what you first went through, because you're into another round in the next level of your sonship life and your sonship education. But that doesn't need to be dealt with really right now, even though that might be interesting. But the issue right now and for the son at this point is that in the view of the adversary's opposition for you to succeed to the very end of the way, God has got every bit of that covered. He knew about it when he designed and forged the curriculum. He thought about your failures and wrote that into the curriculum so that you could recover and succeed, and even took every one of the tactics of the policy of evil that could be plied against you to separate you from the love of Christ. All of that is into consideration, and it's all in the curriculum. And there's preserving power in that curriculum to preserve the way so that you make it all the way to the very end of achieving the goal of it all and being fully conformed to the image of Christ. I don't know whether to say, I'm thinking whether I should say this or not, but I think I said it at some point. I'll say it anyway. Really, that's achieved by the time you finish level 2. You have a whole third level yet to go, but you have achieved it by the end of level 2. And then whether or not you actually get to the entire point of being the man of understanding could hinge upon some things that we probably shouldn't talk about right now. But we'll leave that for right now. That's why I was thinking, maybe I shouldn't say anything about this. But even that's even the Father has all that. There'll be absolutely no difference at the judgment seat of Christ. The Father has taken all of this into consideration and all that kind of intimidation, and he's provided for... Listen, this is one of the reasons why you will find at periods throughout the sonship curriculum, you're going to find your father described in different ways. And they seem benign right now. They seem, that's nice. You would never talk about it that way in public. You would always say, oh, that's great, that's wonderful. But you may look at it right now and you say, well, that's nice, and that's nice, and that's nice. And what I'm talking about are those periods where Paul will come along and he'll say, now the God of hope. Now the God of peace. And when you're undergoing the effects and the ravages of the policy of evil, that's what you need him to be. The God of hope, the God of peace, to bring that tranquility back into your heart when the adversary is trying to pry you away from the love of Christ through the tactics he's employing. And all the words that he has written to you live in you to powerfully be able to preserve that way. So the issue right now is for you to recognize, before you even get to the beginning of your education, looking on the outside of the door going into it, my Father has built into the curriculum the means for preserving the way of his sons who are set apart to the end of the goal of their sonship life. Those saints are the ones he has preserved the way. This preserving the way of his saints isn't for everybody. In the context, this is for the sons who've been set apart to that purpose of achieving the end of the way. Now at the outset, you realize your father's going to function in a way that provides for preserving that way. that you're walking to the very end and objective of it all. And you're made aware in our curriculum from Romans 8:36 down all the way to the end of the chapter 39 that God does have it all covered. That's what that persuasion that I went over. I am persuaded. And you're told you have it all covered, that more than merely just saying, I got to grit my teeth and I can endure the separation tactics. God says, no, you can be more than a conqueror in all those tactics. And then you get all that information in 2 Corinthians that comes along later and provides for you to go through the sufferings of Christ when they come. And the curriculum has progressive information. That's why when you pay attention to the words, as you go through Paul's epistles, you find there's progressive information that makes it so that you first become, you have to, before you go through the sufferings of Christ, you have to be willing to do it. And he first teaches you and gives you doctrine that makes you willing. And then a little later on, you're going to find Paul talking about over in the level 2 epistles, he's going to talk about the sufferings of Christ and he's going to start talking about rejoicing in them. When Paul was thrown into prison, he sang. I don't even know if he was a good singer. He probably wasn't. He sang. And even though depression was at his, on the threshold of his heart, he wasn't cast down. He wasn't all of those things. And folks, this sounds, outside the context of sonship, this sounds insane. And in any other context, it would be insane. But Paul actually gets to the point. You go to the Philippians and he says, that I may know him and the fellowship of his sufferings. I want them. I desire them. Are you kidding me? That's how I feel right now. I'm not to that point. I'm willing, but it's a little bit still scary for me to say I desire them. Because sure as shooting, I get my desire. Well, you find out from the fifth probing question, that's why these match up, of Romans 8:35, the objective of the adversary is to drive that wedge between you and the love of Christ, because that'll make it so you don't want to go on, you don't want to continue on that way anymore, you've lost that love that you once had. And the adversary has the right, once you start on the way, to employ those seven tactics we talked about in our first session, to try to drive that wedge between you. And there's a very critical reason why this is called the love of Christ and the love of God in verse 39. One of the things that maybe I didn't bring out as well as I should have, I know I mentioned it because when I went back and looked at my notes, it was in there. And it's always been in my mind. But the reason he says, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? And then later on, I am persuaded that none of these things shall separate me from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Love. There's a power that love has that is designed and it's supposed to maintain the way that you're on. And there are parallels to that, even in marriage, for instance, a marriage relationship or a loving relationship. Godly love, as you learn, is able to endure a lot of things. That's one of the reasons why this is first dropped into your thinking this way. Because that love of Christ wasn't just produced in you because God wanted you to love what he loved. But when love is genuinely produced, and especially godly love is genuinely produced, it has a powerful concept to it that keeps you adhered to what you're loving. It maintains it. It maintains that objective and it maintains that relationship through thick and thin. That's why in the marriage vows, I always go back to the old standards. You know, wilt thou love it? in sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer. That's a examination of the love issue. Love will endure through sickness and health. True love will. Godly love is designed with even greater power to maintain you on the way than that. That love of Christ, that's the whole thing that will keep you going. There's sometimes that's the only thing that's going to keep you going. And remember when we studied that, that's one of the reasons why when you get later on in Paul's epistle, I don't have time to go through all this. There's so much I'd like to go through. But you remember when we were going through this, Paul will talk about in the Ephesian letter, he'll talk about the fact that that God's love passeth understanding. You come to a point in your sonship life where that love is so powerful and so able to maintain you, you don't even need to have your father give you a reason for what's going on. That and that alone is powerful enough to maintain you on the way. It's a fascinating issue. But that adversary wants to separate you from that and put something else in your mind. Plant something there and put something there so that you don't want to continue on that way anymore. But you're supposed to be fully persuaded by what your father tells you about himself and what he's told you about the curriculum he's put in your hand and that he's designed specifically for you to go through and to reach the end of its objective. That not only can you withstand the opposition of the adversary, and not only can you endure it all, but the curriculum is designed so that the adversary's opposition only makes it so you get to the objective of the way even faster and better prepared and better qualified than if he'd never opposed you at all in the first place. What confidence that inspires. When you come to the end of Romans chapter 8, And you now it should naturally occur to you that the next thing that should happen is that you should present yourself to your father and say, let's do it, let's get going. Not to say this in a bad or negative way, but it really comes to the point where I'm tired talking about it. Let's get going. Let's do this thing. And that's where we are at the sonship checkpoint of Romans 12, 1 and 2. Well, in that small way, that's how my understanding is the fifth probing question in Romans 8, 35 through 39. I've just got 35 on the board, how it matches up with the fifth component of the exhortation to the son's commitment to the effectual working of what he learns. And then you have verse 9 come along and that conclusion, then, son, thou shalt understand righteousness. When that, without the commitment to the effectual working of every component of what your father teaches you, you can look at verse 9 there in Proverbs chapter 2 and say, without that commitment on my part to its effectual working, I will never, ever understand righteousness. I will never understand judgment. I will never understand equity, and I have no hope of understanding every good path. It's just as critical as having to be honestly attending to have interactive, to commit yourself to the interactive working of what you learn and of making it the highest priority in those first three ifs of Proverbs 2 so that only then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Well, only when this is a reality will the then be a reality for you. When your father has actually provided the wisdom and you're taking advantage of the sound wisdom he's laid up, using him as the buckler, the means for the buckler to walk uprightly, that he keeps the paths of judgment and preserves the way of the saints, when all of those things, when that commitment to the effectual working of what you learn is proper and positive, then the understanding of those decision-making skills will all be fully yours. So when you put all those five probing questions and the five corresponding exhortations together, those first two kind of obstacle-type problems, and then the three direct enemies or forms of opposition of your flesh, and of you opting for the world's paths instead of your father's grace-given opportunities for vocational training. And then that third one of the adversary himself and you being victimized by the satanic policy of evil. When you put those all together, when you know that the curriculum can handle all those things, every fear you've got can be allayed. And you come to what you can say with the Apostle Paul for the same reason he says it, you're fully persuaded that this is so. And you say that in an honest assessment of it all. You're not being dishonest in your own heart. You're not being dishonest with the text. But you honestly say that without a shadow of a doubt in your mind that that's so. That your father and his curriculum can handle all those things. And nothing has been overlooked by him. He hasn't dropped a stitch. He hasn't forgot about something. He's not going to be blindsided. And everything's been taken care of. Then the full measure of godly enthusiasm and godly optimism. When you face Romans 12, 1 and 2, you're not afraid to present your body. You're not reluctant. You're not hesitant. But you have the full measure of godly optimism, and that needs to be there for day one of class one. It's that's there. If that's all there, then folks, you're ready to start getting your education underway. If that's all there, you're ready for Romans 12, 1 and 2. And to get the education underway in verse 3 and following. Now I'll tell you this. If that level of commitment, based upon the effectual working of what you've gone through in Sonship Orientation and Sonship Establishment, if that's only 30% there in you, and you go on into Romans 12 and following, you're only going to get 30% of the education. If it's 50%, then all you're going to get out of Romans 12, 3 and following is 50%. But if it's 100% there, then you're going to get 100% out of Romans 12, 3 and following. That's the way it works. So as far as I'm concerned, I know the Father's done everything He knows how to do. I've done everything I know how to do as your pastor, as a surrogate father, to give you exhortation, forms of doctrine, and post-doctrinal exhortation to your sonship orientation and to your sonship establishment. Beginning on Wednesday night, we're now going to approach Romans 12, 1 and 2. And I'm going to teach through it. And when we get done with it, what I expect you to do privately between you and your father is that you commit to him your living body as a living sacrifice. And then we'll come back and we'll see who has. And if you're ready to go, then we'll go. Romans 12, 3, and we get going. So beginning Wednesday night, we approach 12, 1 and 2. We're going to start dealing with that now in detail. So, that's it. I'm excited about it. I can't wait. I've been wanting to get to this point for a long time. All right, we'll stop right there and we'll pick it up back in Romans 12 on Wednesday night with our heads back.